we're going to be very focused in trying to make sure that that assistance can go through, that it's monitored effectively.
Questioning Afghanistan. It's Thursday, September 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, White House climate, waning pandemic help, world air quality, Chinese phone maker in Africa, students struggle remotely. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told U.S. lawmakers the Biden administration was prioritizing evacuating Americans and Afghans working for the U.S. Agency for Global Media and the National Endowment for Democracy from Afghanistan. The effort comes as the United States weighs how to send millions of dollars in aid directly to Afghans and not to the de facto Taliban government. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
The de facto government of Afghanistan, the Taliban, were warned Tuesday by top U.S. lawmakers that further sanctions could be on the way.
The United States and the United Nations should maintain existing sanctions on the Taliban. The U.S. should reimpose those sanctions that were waived during the negotiations process. And the U.S. should consider new measures to impose higher costs on the group and its leaders, while ensuring that life-saving humanitarian aid is able to assist those most vulnerable.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken pledged that $64 million in new U.S. aid will go directly to the people of Afghanistan and not the Taliban. As he faced a second tough day of questions on Capitol Hill about the Biden administration's management of a chaotic evacuation at Kabul Airport last month.
I don't want to sugarcoat this because we know that while the Taliban seeks and will probably support and protect basic humanitarian assistance through these agencies, like for food and medicine, it may be a different story when it comes to things that are directed specifically at women and girls. So we're going to be very focused on that and trying to make sure that that assistance can go through, that it's monitored effectively.
But the fate of thousands of SIVs, Afghan allies who assisted the U.S. and were promised special visas to leave Afghanistan, remains uncertain, with lawmakers on both sides of the aisle saying the Biden administration still has not done enough to speed up the application process.
Not counting the SIVs that arrived before Kabul's fall, you evacuated 705 of roughly 20,000 principal SIV applicants. What happened to these people?
U.S. officials say they are still working to evacuate Americans and Afghans from the country. But the top Republican on the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee says the overall number of at-risk Afghans left behind is even larger than expected.
We think about 30,000 at-risk Afghans were evacuated out of an estimated 60,000. That's the best numbers we can come up with because we can't get good numbers from the administration.
After weeks of concern, Blinken did pledge to prioritize the evacuation of Afghans who worked for the U.S. Agency for Global Media and who are now in hiding in Afghanistan.
There's about 550 employees and family members from Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, who were not evacuated. Is the department prioritizing their evacuation?
Yes.
The U.S. and its allies evacuated 124,000 people, mostly Afghans, from the Kabul airport. Most of them between the fall of Kabul on August 15th and the last U.S. military flight out of Afghanistan on August 31st. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The story continues to develop. Follow it by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia, as well as Facebook and our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China and United States tug of war tightens as both try to cement friendships around Asia. Hong Kong security chief demands list of press group members. 9 Hong Kong activists sentenced for taking part in banned vigil. Central Vietnam faces strictest lockdown to date. Exiled physician fighting for a better Myanmar. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and of course our website, that's voanews.com. There's much more VOA Asia. Right now, U.S. President Joe Biden says extreme weather caused by climate change is putting America in a code red situation. He is pushing two massive bills in Congress totaling in the trillions of dollars to help reverse the damage. From Washington, VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell looks at what is at stake.
Raging fires, howling hurricanes, rising floodwaters. You're not imagining it, says U.S. President Joe Biden. The weather is changing in scary and unpredictable ways, with hurricanes, floods, and wildfires all ravaging swaths of the continental U.S. This week, he is touring wildfire-affected areas and making his plea to the American people.
Extreme weather cost America last year $99 billion. Let me say it again. Extreme weather in the United States cost the United States of America a total of $99 billion. And this year, unfortunately, we're going to break that record. It's a devastating loss to our economy and for so many communities.
His solution, a juggernaut $3.5 trillion spending plan that will, among other things, invest in clean energy and green vehicles and reduce the country's dependence on polluting industries. That bill has passed the House, but now it's up to the 100 Americans in the Senate. Environmental advocates are watching closely and say one concern is that these bills are full of other contentious items that could slow their passage.
The reconciliation package is not just climate change. It's also a series of social programs. And we don't know, you know, where that will come down. And so it could be clean energy advocates who are disappointed. It could be social program advocates who are disappointed, or some combination of the two.
But advocates argue this is urgent. Parts of the country are literally on fire.
As we've been seeing over the last summer and really the last couple of years, with natural disasters across the country getting worse, wildfires in the West, hurricanes in the Gulf, and the information that has been coming out of our top science bodies that climate change is here and it is continuing to get worse. And we have a vanishingly small window to act and reverse those impacts.
The bill's opponents raise a number of objections, but there are cheaper ways to spur green energy. The traditional industries like coal will see job losses, and that the bill's price tag is just too high.
It's not hard to see that another $3 or $4 trillion of government debt is really not good for the federal government. I think it would get us closer to a financial crisis. We have to remember that 10 years ago, numerous countries like Greece and Italy got into serious government financial and economic crises because the government borrowed too much money. I fear the United States is going in that direction.
So now what? Biden says he's determined to pass this legislation despite hurdles in Congress. Republicans are united in opposition, and even some Democratic lawmakers have misgivings. In coming weeks, the Senate will decide. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, lots of jobs, lots of unemployed, but not many matches. Happening now in Asia, in Indonesia, a small cargo plane with three crew members on board transporting construction material crashed into a mountain in the jungle-clad region of Papua. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Now that federal unemployment benefits have expired, unemployed Americans are being encouraged to apply for about 10 million job vacancies available nationwide. But VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias explains why not everyone seems to be rushing back to the job market.
A job fair recently held in suburban Leesburg, Virginia, provided a much-needed networking opportunity for Lisette Bess. She lost her job as a community manager due to the pandemic. and was among the roughly 9 million Americans who lost their federal unemployment benefits on September 4th.
A lot of people have been trying to get jobs for a while because even with the unemployment benefits, it provides a small cushion, but it doesn't really provide enough for you to plan for other things like, you know, purchasing a home or insurance or taking care of your family.
Ironically, employers are eager to fill about 10 million job vacancies around the country, but are having trouble recruiting. The second largest public transit system in the U.S. is advertising 400 jobs. But even with competitive salaries, it's been a tough sell in COVID times, said Metro officer Alberto Marino.
Maybe people are still a little bit scared to apply for a job or to be in contact with the public. But this type of event, we explain people how the job is, the whole safety protocol that we need to take in consideration for that.
Since March 2020, about $700 billion has been spent in financial assistance to unemployed workers. The federal government will run an estimated $3 trillion deficit this fiscal year, and it would be difficult to justify adding more to that by reinstating the expired benefits, according to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a government watchdog.
It was good for the economy because they could still go out and spend money in the economy. And so now that those have expired, you know, it's important that people go back to work.
But predictions are mixed about whether the sudden end to federal unemployment benefits and a $300 weekly boost to state unemployment benefits will result in an uptick in hiring, especially for industries paying the minimum wage.
I actually am quite hopeful for the U.S. economy moving forward to essentially make it easy for people to continue to remain out of work diminishes national productivity over time, especially because the longer that someone remains out of work, the lower the chance of them returning to work.
Jobs are not available in significant geographies and significant sectors of the economy as a result of the pandemic. I think the critical thing right now is for states to do what the Biden administration says they can do, and use existing funds from the American Rescue Plan to continue to pay benefits.
Alex Jordan Koo has held several temporary jobs during the pandemic. Koo says relying on unemployment benefits, even if the state extended them, would be a family taboo. Thus, the need to find a full-time position with safety in mind.
I am worried about the variants that are surpassing the vaccine pretty much. Just seeing that more and more people struggle makes me worry more about, like, staying safe and all that, you know.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Leesburg, Virginia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea successfully test-fired a submarine-launched ballistic missile. The test came hours after North Korea fired two ballistic missiles into the sea, according to the South's military. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia. In the first report of its kind, the World Meteorological Organization examines the close link between air quality and climate change, and how measures stemming from COVID-19 influenced air quality patterns in 2020. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Meteorological Organization report notes more than 11,000 weather-related disasters have occurred during the 50-year period, causing more than 2 million deaths and economic losses of $3.64 trillion. That constitutes a five-fold increase in natural disasters and a three-fold decrease in deaths. WMO Secretary General Petteri Talla says fewer people are being killed thanks to early warning systems, which have saved thousands of lives. He says economic losses, however, have been growing very rapidly and are expected to continue to climb.
We are going to see more climatic extremes because of climate change, and this negative trend in climate will continue for the coming decades anyhow. And if we are successful with climate mitigation, we could stop this negative trend around 2060s. And if we are most lucky, we could limit it, the warming to 1.5 degrees.
The report finds more than 90% of deaths are in developing countries, while nearly 60% of losses due to economic damage are in wealthier countries. The top 10 deadliest weather disasters have been droughts, storms, floods, and increasingly heat waves. The WMO reports the five costliest disasters since 1970 were storms in the United States. Topping the list is Hurricane Katrina, which hit the city of New Orleans, Louisiana in 2005 and incurred economic losses of more than $163 billion. On the other hand, the chief of the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction, Mamie Mizutori, says enhanced early warning and preventive measures are saving many lives. The most recent example, she says, is Hurricane Ida, which battered the same area Sunday. While Hurricane Katrina killed more than 1,800 people, she notes Ida claimed a handful of lives.
What made the difference this time is that the city designed a new hurricane and storm damage risk reduction system, investing $14.5 billion in gates, flood walls, and levees that protected this once-in-a-century storm.
Last year, the UN says 31 million people were displaced by climate change and extreme weather events, a number that may soon be higher than those being displaced by conflict. UN weather experts recommend nations strengthen risk prevention measures to save people's lives and reduce damage caused by natural hazards. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, nine veteran democracy activists in Hong Kong were sentenced to between 6 and 10 months in jail for joining a Tiananmen vigil banned by police last year. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Chinese telecommunications giant Huawei says it wants to train up to 3 million African youths to work with digital technology, including cutting-edge technology such as artificial intelligence. Already, Nigerian students who took part in a Huawei-sponsored ICT competition say the benefits, including possible job placements with the company, are enormous. But experts warn there could be potential negative impacts of China's growing tech influence in Africa. Timothy Obezu reports from Abuja.
Yet a student, Mohamed Mehaja, will graduate from the Ahmadu Bello University, Nigeria's Kaduna State, in roughly 3 months. He was one of a team of six from the school who represented Nigeria at the Huawei Global ICT Competition in 2019 and finished in third place. Huawei introduced the competition in Africa 6 years ago with the stated aim of finding and teaching highly skilled ICT professionals. It says the competition has so far impacted an estimated 2,000 African students.
We have been exposed to devices and technologies we've never experienced before. Normally, a normal university student will not experience what we experience in the competition. So I would say that this has made me to be much more IT inclined, so to say.
The competition evaluates students' competence in network and cloud technology. Mehaja and his team's success in 2019 meant they were the best team in sub-Saharan Africa, and that inspired many of the students, like Hamza at Tabor.
I was inspired by, you know, when they talked about their stories, how they won the competition, and also when they were given their prizes and everything. I just felt, okay, this is actually something to make sacrifice for.
Students like Mehaja and Atabo are meeting Huawei's set objective, but critics say the company is a representation of China's accelerating presence in Africa's technology landscape. Huawei reportedly accounts for more than 70% of the continent's telecommunications network. ICT expert Samuel Adekola says China could use its competitive advantage for political ends.
It's really dangerous. I cannot quantify how much they could go, because whoever has data, you can do a lot of things. Whoever has data has a lot of information. With data, you can extract a lot of information about a group of people, about the nation.
Concerns about China's presence in Africa grew in 2019 after a U.S. newspaper, The Wall Street Journal, reported that Huawei had helped Ugandan and Zambian authorities spy on their opponents. Huawei denied the accusations and turned down requests for an interview for this story. Even as students like Mehaja and Atabo learn valuable skills, experts say Africa may have to pay a price for relying too heavily on foreign companies. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Throughout the pandemic, college students in the United States have struggled with studying remotely. The same is true for foreign students enrolled in American universities. Connor Smith takes a look.
The COVID-19 pandemic forced many colleges and universities to move classes online. As the 2021 school year is about to start and cases of the virus are spiking again, students fear another delayed return to campus. Like many international students, Syracuse University junior Jessica Tran took classes from home in Vietnam. A photography major, Tran wasn't able to get hands-on experience with photography equipment.
Kind of feel like I just wasted a year or so of learning remotely because I don't feel like I'm learning as much as I used to be. And so when I come back, I'm just planning on taking as many classes as I can and just trying to not waste my time.
Jenny Zhang attended class remotely from China last year. A Columbia University junior, she felt detached from her classmates.
I basically made no new friends in any of my classes over Zoom. And I think relying on the group of friends I made in freshman year was, not what I wanted to do. I hoped for more friends my sophomore year.
Many universities had to adjust quickly to the pandemic to teach online. This led to delays and problems adapting to technology, says Zi Zhang, a junior at Syracuse University.
I know that we have a lot of great professors, but the fact is that they are not very good at technology. We as a school, as students, as professors, we as a community definitely can do better to, support each other in those kind of things.
Afghan student Frozan Tahiri says she can relate. She took classes at Wagner College in Staten Island from Afghanistan and found interactions with fellow students were rare because of time zone differences.
Learning is not all about classes only. Half of it is about social interactions. And with online class, obviously that side of things has been taken away.
Connor Smith for VOA News, Washington.
That's our program for today. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue with us online. You'll find us at Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and of course, Facebook. And follow us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Chris Cascao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.